තෙරුවන් සරණයි. How are you all today? Good. You're all such selfish people. When such disaster is going around in the country, you're here but not helping them. In the face of adversity, in the face of disaster, people should go and help each other, right? But you're not helping each other. You're here listening to the Dhamma. Such selfish people. Well, given that, you are actually selfish. That's a trailer. Okay, so before we start the sermon, let us all bring our palms together in veneration to the perfect one, to the infinitely compassionate one, who is our master, the one who showed us our guide light, the one who showed us the path to the ultimate liberation, our teacher, our master, the supremely enlightened Lord Buddha. Let us chant the Namaskara 3 times to pay our veneration to the supremely enlightened Lord Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. It seems like it's truly unfair how the universe treats people. Yeah? No. It seems like it, right? It takes people away from this universe, from this world, from their lives. It gives birth to some. It makes young people older. It never makes old people young, does it? No. It makes young people older. And then after they grow into the old age, then there comes a day that in which they have to leave this world. It's truly unfair. How universe treats this, the people in the world. And then it brings natural disasters like tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, and pandemics, just like the COVID pandemic that recently we went to. And then we hear that a part of the globe, or it's a global crisis, that lots of people, and then wars. Lots of people has to say goodbye to this world. It is truly unfair, isn't it? It seems very unfair how universe treats people. I mean, just think about your lives, ladies and gentlemen. In your lives, haven't there been occasions where you thought that it's so unfair? Why all this happens to me? Why me? When there's so many people around me, why me? Haven't there been occasions like that in your life? Why just me? It only does this to me. Hasn't the universe been unfair to you? Unfair times in life? When you lost a match? When you lost a bet? So in the times of Aurudu, usually in Sri Lanka, for the New Year times, you play something called, I don't know what you call in English for that, Katagahana. So you put bets for the number that you get. And you put bets for the number that others get as well. You bet. And also for There are lots of gambling going on in the world. So when you lose stuff, and just think about if you're a businessman, you're doing your business, great. But then sometimes, haven't there been occasions where you lost a lot of money in your business? Maybe you invested in something and then it turned out it's a failure. You invested expecting success to be your outcome, but then it became a failure all of a sudden. And then you think to yourself, how unfair it is. Sometimes you think to yourself that how unfair sometimes the other people around you treat you. And sometimes people think how unfair it is that they're born to this world in the way that, in the circumstance that they have to be living in. Sometimes people think like that. But is it truly the universe which is unfair? Is it truly the universe? Is it truly the way that the things that you experience, is it that which is unfair? If you think about the past lives of the Arhatunahanses as well, there are many occasions that we have heard stories about the Arhatunahanses as well. Their lives look like it is very unfair. For example, think about the life of Venerable Patachara, if you have heard of that story. She had to go through, during a heavy rain, she had to give birth to a child. And with all of that pain, she lost her husband on the same day. And while she's traveling to find her mother's place, she was traveling to her hometown, she lost her newborn child and the son that she already had for a few years. She lost that child. So her newborn child was taken away by a hawk or an eagle. And it was because of the heavy rain, there was a huge flood. The river was overflowing, and then there was a big current in that river, and then this younger son got caught in that current, the other son. So she lost her husband, she lost her two children, and then she was the only one. And she carried on continuing to her hometown because there was no other refuge for her. But then when she approaches her hometown, she got to hear that because of the rain and because of the heavy rain for a few days, just like these days, the stories that you hear these days, just like because of the heavy rain, the walls of the house of her parents have collapsed. The walls have collapsed and everyone who were inside has gone away with it. They have all died. So she lost her husband, she lost her two children, and ultimately she got to hear that her whole family is gone. I think she had a brother or a sister, I think it was a brother, and her two parents. All of them had died. And then she was desperate. She was thinking to herself that I have no one to me. I have no one to help. I have no refuge in this world. And then just thinking about this, she got crazy. And then she was running around in the world, in the country, in the city that she was in. Sorry, in the country. She was running around, just like a crazy woman. But then someone directed her. Luckily, someone directed her towards where the Lord Buddha was. And then she ran to that place, and then she fell in front of the Lord Buddha, and then there was one word that the Lord Buddha said. He didn't go explaining Dhamma and all that to her at that time, because it was not a time for the Dhamma. It was not a time for that. She didn't go explaining all that. He didn't go explaining all that. The Lord Buddha said, "Sister, I am here for you." That's all he said. That itself calmed her, all of her frustration, all of her fears down. Why? Because she got to know that there is someone for her. She got to know that there is someone for her in this world. She got to know that there is someone for her in this world. Because that is all she lost, right? Her whole family. She lost her whole family. And she started feeling that, I don't have anyone in this world. There's no one for me. I'm alone. So therefore, she was so desperate. She felt destitute. And therefore, she was running around. And then the Lord Buddha identified this. Of course, being the perfect one. He knew what to do exactly. And then he said, sister, I'm here for you. We are here for you. That's all he said. As soon as he said that, she calmed down. Because she got to know that there is someone for me. But what I wanted to say is that this is just one of the stories. And then other stories include Venerable Sagata. So in his life, he was a son born to a merchant, a very wealthy merchant, a very rich man. But then one day his house got into a fire. And then he had to live with beggars. When he was living with beggars, this group of beggars got a lot of food to eat, and when they begged in the streets, they received something. But when Sagata was going with them, they didn't receive anything. When Sagata was going with those beggars, they didn't receive anything. And then the beggars thought, there is someone. Let's get the odd one out. The beggars thought, intelligently, they thought that there is someone in this group. Because of him, we are not getting these days. Let's divide the group into two and check. And then they divided the group into two and then went on begging. One group got, the other group with Sagata didn't receive anything. And then they divided that group further. And then they pinpointed the man down. It is Sagata's fault, they thought. That when we go with Sagata around in the streets begging, we won't receive anything. Therefore, they thought that, let's get him out of the group. And then they kicked him out of the group. Just think about it. But then later on, he went on to become, I think, the foremost among the supernatural power of fire, as I can remember. So that is the story of Venerable Sagata. Such a very, very, very harsh life. When you think about the story of Venerable Patachara, maybe we even feel today that, why did the universe treat her like that? Why did the people around her treat her like that? It's so unfair. Don't we feel like that? In one way, in the other perspective, we check that she became an Aritu Nohansi, didn't she? She finished her journey. And we're still in this. Thinking about her, how universe treated her, how unfair it was. We're still in this. But just think that how universe just treated her, how unfair it was. These days, we hear lots of news of landslides and lots of disaster in the country. And when you hear those stories, we feel that the universe treats people very, very badly. It's very harsh. How can people withstand these? That's looking from one lens. But we need to learn to look from the right lens, ladies and gentlemen. We need to start to learn to look at this world from the right lens, the right view. When you start to look at this world from the right view, from the right lens, then we start seeing that this universe hasn't been unfair to anyone in this world. Just like we discussed last week, the god of karma has not been unfair to anyone in this world. The god of karma is always fair. The god of karma is always fair. Because everyone has a karma record book. Everyone has a book of karma. Everyone has a record book of karma. All the things that you do are recorded there. It is registered there. It is registered up there. When I say up there, it's not somewhere up there. It is somewhere, but it is registered. It is registered there. Everyone in this world, every individual mind receives from that record book of each mind. It doesn't receive, so a certain mind wouldn't receive karma or vipaka from another record book. It will only receive from its own record book. So therefore, we can't say that this world is very unfair. This world has never been unfair to anyone. The universe has never been unfair to anyone. We just need to understand how things work and why things happen. But what we tend to do is we tend to look at the things that happen in this world, and then the what is what we look at. When you see a huge disaster happen, when you see a huge world war is going on, we tend to see that why is this happening? We don't see that why this is happening. We see what is happening. And we tend to feel that it's unfair. So we tend to feel that why are these things happening to these people? Why are these things happening to this world? People are ruining this world. They're not. Everything happens because of causes. Every effect takes place in this world because of causes. Just imagine, I'll tell you a small story. Just imagine a situation where, I think I've explained this before, but a situation where you go to a beach. When you go to the beach, what do you expect? What do you see? You see sand. You see other trees, other birds, maybe kids playing around, and other tourists maybe. But in this beach, this is a very lonely place. This is a very lonely, gloomy beach. And on the beach, you see a sandcastle. So as soon as you see the sandcastle, what does that imply to you? You look around the place, and you see the ocean, you see the sea. And when you look around, there is no one around that place, only you. But there's a sandcastle on the beach. What does that imply? Exactly. It implies someone's been there before you. Someone's been there. That is what it implies at first. Someone's been there. And then there's another implication. Something else should come to your mind. Someone's been there. Sorry? A child. A child. Where are they? All of these things come to your head. Someone's been there. And what is the natural inclination of sand? What is the natural way of the sand should be? Scattered as chaos. That is the natural nature of sand. Just like all the other sand on the beach, or all the other grains of sand on the beach. That is the natural nature of sand. So, at this certain place, you have sand turned into a sand castle. So that implies someone's been here before me, and he wanted this. This had been a necessity for whoever that had been here. The necessity had been the sandcastle. That is their necessity. So, a necessity has been there, and that necessity was the sandcastle. So, that person didn't want a car made out of sand. He didn't want that. He didn't want a person made out of sand. It's like a snowman or a sandman. He didn't want a sandman made out of sand. He didn't want that. He wanted a sandcastle. Even if of a sandcastle, this specific sandcastle in this configuration, in this way, made in this way, made in this shape. He wanted exactly that. That is what he wanted. That sandcastle is what he wanted. And that is why it is right here now. So therefore, what had he done to make it possible for that sandcastle to be there? Exactly. So he'd collected the sand, which is scattered all over, everywhere. He collected a portion of that, and then he had built it into a sandcastle. He had built it into a castle, because that is what he wanted. That is exactly what he wanted. He created what exactly he wanted to fulfill his necessity. That is what he'd done. But then, you go there, you don't want a sandcastle. You want something else. You want a sandflower, maybe. You want a sandman, maybe. You want a sand car, maybe. So, as soon as you want that, what happens to the sandcastle? You go there, you break it down, and then you rearrange the sand according to your necessity. That's why sometimes when if you'd had a little brother or a sister or elder brother or sister, when they build something up using maybe Lego, or maybe when they build something up with something, right? If you're the elder one, what do you tend to do? You won't wait until they complete or midway. You're somewhere looking at that thing, and then you throw something at it. And then you want to break it down. You want to bring it down. Why? Because your necessity is to see it scattered. But their necessity is to see it built into whatever they wanted. With building blocks or Lego or whatever. So that is the difference between your necessity and their necessity. But whenever the necessity comes, then you try to do something in order to build up that necessity, in order to fulfill that necessity, in order to make that necessity come into life. When there's a necessity, always you collect causes together and then you build something to fulfill that necessity. But then, never it did become whatever you were building. But the mind started to feel that the necessity was fulfilled. Just think about this sermon hall right now. You're here because you had a necessity to come to the sermon. Just think about it. In the morning you were in the bed, and if you didn't have the necessity, maybe you were planning to go somewhere else. If you didn't have the necessity to come here, if you weren't so selfish. Just kidding. So what I mean by selfish here is not to offend you. I'll explain what I mean by selfish later. Then you'll understand that everyone in this world, every single person, are selfish. So, because you had a necessity to come here, come to the sermon, because that necessity was in your mind, all of you gathered here. And then, the Swaminarayan also came here, because there was a necessity. And then, the sermon started happening. If you didn't have the necessity, then you wouldn't have come here. If you would have another necessity, then you would have gone there. That necessity would have been fulfilled. But right now, you're fulfilling a certain necessity. When this necessity is over, then this would no longer be like this. These chairs are arranged according to the necessity. Someone wanted the sermon to happen here. And then the chairs were arranged according to that. When there's a group discussion going on, the chairs are arranged according to that. When there's nothing going on in this hall, then the chairs are stacked on the sides. That is the necessity at that time. So all the time, every single instant, always what collects things is a necessity. Necessity collects all the things that which are scattered everywhere, just like the sand story, just like a sand castle. But what did the sand castle have to do there? What is the purpose of the sand castle? So another example would be, if you take a house, you have walls, you have a door, you have a ceiling, you have a roof, right? And windows. So what do the walls do? Why are the walls there? To protect the house, to cover it. Why is there a roof? To protect from the sun and from water, from the rain. And then why is there a door? To give access into the inside and outside of the house. Why are there windows? For you to look outside and for sunlight to come in. So all of these things which are parts of the house, because this is my little house. The roof's open. So all of these parts have a role to play. The wall has a role to play. The windows have a role to play. The door has a role to play. The roof has a role to play. And all of the parts of the house has a role to play. Right? They have a function. The door has a function of giving access. The window has a function of giving you a view outside. The walls have a function of protecting the house and keeping the house upright. And the roof has a function of covering it. So all of these parts have a function. But what about the function of the house? What is the function of the house? So now do you see that there is no function to the house? The house doesn't have to do anything there. It's just the name that we use to for the collective word, that is the collective word that we use to call all of these functions. But when taken individually, they're just individual functions taking place. But does the door know it is a part of this house? It's just a door. It's not the door of this house. It's just a door. It's not a window of the house. It's the window. A window has a window function. Window has its own function. It's just a window. It has its own function. It's not the window of the house. Because what came first? Window or the house? When you're building the house, you don't call an uncompleted house a house, do you? You'd still say that I'm building my house these days, but still you have laid the bricks only. You don't even have windows. But which came first? You have the bricks first, and then you put the windows next, and generally, you put the windows next, and then the roof, and then dot, dot, dot. Everything comes, and then comes the house. Is it like the boss that who comes to the work? Everyone has to come, and then the boss comes. Is it like that? So the house didn't have to do anything. Where did the house come from? And then when you're breaking down a house, you remove the roof, and then you remove the wood, and then you remove the windows, you take out the doors, and you take out the bricks. Where did the house go? You just remove the roof, the windows, the door, and the bricks. That's all you removed. Where did the house go? So the house itself didn't have a function at all. Do you get it? The house itself didn't have a function at all. The only functions there were is to give access, is to protect it from the sun, from all the rain, is to protect the to cover it. Those were the functions. So all of those functions are there, but then you talk about house, which doesn't even have a function. And then apply this to your life. You're walking. Who is walking? You are walking. What are you doing when you're walking? You tell me that, Swaminathan, I am moving my legs in order to walk. That is how I walk. I'm moving my hands. That is how I walk. I'm giving the commands to these parts of the body. And what is the brain doing? Then what is the function of the brain? The brain gives commands to the body. The body takes the commands of the brain. You can't give a command to the body, can you? If you can, you should have the ability to generate electrical impulses. Do you have that? Are you like the super the hero of a movie, like who can generate electrical impulses? You don't have that ability, but your body has. The body has the ability to generate electrical impulses. They travel down your neurons. And then it's not even a single electrical impulse that just travels down the neuron, because between two neurons, there's a thing called the synapse or a synapse. And in that place, chemicals get passed from one neuron, one end of a neuron to the other. So it's not just single electrical impulse that just travels from the brain to the other part of the body. It's not even that. So lots of things happen, and then your hand moves. Have you seen anyone with, you call it hypercalcemia? So that usually comes when you don't have enough carbon dioxide inside your body. When someone's breathing heavily, because they want to breathe in very fast, let's say their nose is blocked, so they try to, because of the fear, they try to breathe in very fast. You'd see this when people get like a cold and they have fever as well. They try to breathe in very fast, and then what happens is their hands get locked. They're not able to move their hands. They would just stay like this. You can't move them. Because calcium ions go and stay in your muscles. I'll put it that way. I don't want to go in deep into biology right now. So it just goes in and they just go and stays on your muscles. Stay on your muscles. So therefore, you're not able to move your hand. It's called hypercalcemia. So if it is you who is moving, then even when you're breathing very heavily, because when you're breathing in, you get oxygen very fast, but you release your breath a little and then you breathe in again. So you don't get much of carbon dioxide, but because you release carbon dioxide very fast. You have lots of oxygen inside your body at that time. So you thought that carbon dioxide is not needed for your body, right? It is also needed. You also need carbon dioxide. This is what happens when you don't have it. You get hypercalcemia. It's not a long-term disease. It's a short-term thing. To get out of that, what you need to do is, that's when you put a bag on your to cover your mouth, and then you have to breathe into it. Breathe in and out from the bag, because then you exhale carbon dioxide and you inhale carbon dioxide. So then it balances the body. You need to have a level of carbon dioxide, not that it's bad. But then when you breathe in too much carbon dioxide, then that is bad. And that will lead to cell death and the death of your cells in the body. But then when you don't have carbon dioxide, that is also bad. That is too much oxygen. That is also bad. That will lead to hypercalcemia. So if it is you who is functioning your hands and your arm and all of the things, then you should be able to move your hands. But you can't. So is it you? So then, if you're not functioning your body, then how is it functioning? It is being functioned by the brain. So if it's being functioned by the brain, what do you have to do there? What is the function of you? But you say all the time that I'm the one who went to the shop, Swaminahansa. I'm the one who bought the goods. I'm the one who did the Buddha Puja. I'm the one who went to the temple. I'm the one who listened to the Dhamma. I went to meditation. It is you all the time. I'm the one who did this. I'm the one who did that. It is always you. But if there's no function of you, then what are you doing here? If there's no function of you, then what do you have to do? If there's no function of the house, then what does the house have to do in this? This is a configuration with windows, the door, and the bricks, and the roof. That's all that's there. You have to do nothing there. Or the house has to do nothing there. Just like that, here as well, you don't have to do anything. What are you doing right now? I'm sitting down, Swaminahansa. To sit down, you don't need you. You only need the body to function in a certain way, a certain arrangement, a certain configuration. That's all you need for you to sit down. What happens when you're falling asleep? Then, that is me, Swaminahansa. Because your concentration goes away, right? And that is my concentration. I am conscious right now, listening to the sermon, but then my concentration goes away, and then I fall asleep. Is it really? Is it really? Is it really your concentration? Last week we discussed that the concentration is a function of the mind. Then someone answered the mind should probably be me. That is why I think all the time. I think very wisely before taking decisions. I think and I discuss and I do all these things before taking a decision. And then I decide before doing something. I even decide today in the morning to come to the monastery. Well done. But were you thinking of that? Is it you who is thinking? If it's you who's thinking, then try not to think this. Because you should be able to do that, right? A grass field, green grass. And at the distance you have a house, a small house. You're thinking already. And on the garden you have a cow grazing on the field. Come on. You told me that you're the one who's thinking, so stop it. Can you? You can't. Why? Because when there are vipaka in this world, vipaka, it is, so think of it as just like, so we talk about the karma record book last week. So in the record book of karma, you have vipaka, right? How does the record book of karma has vipaka? So it's just like your student record book has points or marks of the exam. You don't have the student in it, do you? So it's just the name of that. So the karma record book itself has vipaka. Vipaka is just like a certain configuration of energy put together. A certain arrangement of energy. A consolidated arrangement of energy. And then it is waiting to be fruitioned. It is waiting to be used. It's just like a pool of energy. So when vipaka comes into fruition, you call it a mind. And that mind, when that mind has ignorance, then this vipaka comes to release. But when that mind has ignorance, it will re-put it back into, again, to a certain configuration, and then it will become vipaka again, which is what you call karma. It always happens with an expectation or a volition. So you always want the vipaka to be in a certain configuration when it comes to your mind. Okay, so it's like this. So this is your karma record book, right? Or which you call the strand of karma, right? So in this you have karma. So just like Guru Amar Rose, so this is your record book of karma, right? So these balls are representing the vipaka that you have accumulated. So what happens is, when you're getting a birth, in what sort of way, what happens is, just think about it, in this life, you don't experience the vipaka of an animal, right? You don't experience the vipaka of a god. You don't experience the vipaka of a Brahma. Why is that? Sorry? Exactly, sir. You don't have the environment for that. Because what happens is, when your body is being formed, a certain set of vipaka comes together. That set of vipaka is what is being fruition throughout your human life. When this birth was put together, when you were about to be born, when you left your last life, this happened. This is what you call the karmaja kaya in Pali. Because kaya is a body. So a body of karma that accumulated together, close together, in order to get fruition in this life. Right? But then, with every single mind, this erases. One erases, but then, if you have ignorance, then one or few gets created. In every single mind. So that is why, because the vipaka that are ready to be fruition for a human being are accumulated together when you are born as a human. So therefore, you won't experience the experience that a god would get, or a deity, or a deva being would get, because you don't have those vipaka in that subset. You have the vipaka, the set of vipaka that is ready to be fruitioned into a human being, a human mind, because this is that environment. You have that environment. So when that environment was created, so that was the initial environment. When that was created, the vipaka that are ready to be fruitioned into that environment gets accumulated. All the vipaka. They get accumulated to be fruitioned into that certain environment. Right? So, then in every single mind, one of these vipaka gets fruitioned. Gets into action. So for example, so this is your eye, and then you're looking at a flower. It's a small petal. So you're looking at a flower. When the eye sees the flower, a vipaka comes down. And then one vipaka fruitions. So let's just take it simply, right? So it's not that for you to identify the flower, it's not just one vipaka that fruitions. It's many vipakas and many minds. But let's just simplify it, right? So a vipaka fruitions for the mind to arise, for the mind to take place in the world. And then the mind is a process itself. It's not one object, and it's not that you're in that object and you're controlling that. It is not your mind. So you'll understand that at the end of this. So it is not your mind that you're controlling and thinking and doing all the functions with. The mind itself is a function. So when the eye sees this flower, so actually the eye doesn't see something. In fact, if you have done biology, you would know that in your eye, in the retina, in the middle, you have the iris, right? So if this is the eye, and then in the middle, so you have a big black part, and then in the middle of that black part, you have a small black dot. What is that? You call it the iris. It's a hole. So it's a hole allowing light to go in. It's not magic. It's a hole. It's just a hole that is allowing, just like the camera. So the camera has a lens. So in that lens, there's a hole in the middle. And then there's the part which is around it, which controls aperture. Just like that, your eye or the iris can control aperture. Because your iris, so if I draw it bigger, so this is your eye, and in the middle, so you have eye muscles around here. So it's just, there's no hole that is pierced into the eye. It's just the muscles that are around together, which looks like a hole. Lots of fibrous muscles are there, which are together, and this is your eye, which are together in very, they're very close, and therefore it shows a shape like a round circular shape. That is what you call the eye. And then, because there are muscles, when you flash a bright light into that, the muscles relax, and therefore your iris gets smaller, because you don't want lots of light going into your lens. That will destroy it. But then when it's dark, what happens to your iris? The muscles contract and they pull them. When they pull it from all directions, then you get a big circle. When you pull it evenly from all directions, you get a big circle. So therefore, more light can go in your eye. So that is just a function of the eye. But we feel that when you draw something like this, we feel that this is a being. We feel that this is a person. But these are just two holes. You're looking at, when you're looking at someone in the eye, you're looking at a hollow thing. You're looking at a black hollow thing. That is what you call your eye. You're looking at a hole, but you call that hole a person. So you can do a small experiment, which is that, so you can take a magnifying glass and then hold it to someone's eye, and take their permission for that, right? And then light a torch, not directly in the eye, but from the side of the eye. And then you can see that the iris contracting and expanding. You can observe that. When you light the torch, you can see the muscles relax and then the iris gets smaller. And then when you light the torch, you can see the muscles contract and then the iris when you dim the torch or when you switch it off, then you can see the muscles contract and then the iris gets bigger. You can try this at night. Because at night, typically the iris is somewhat bigger because it's dark around. So you can do that small experiment and then see that this is just a hole. But when you look at the eye, and then there's the nose, and then there's a mouth, we tend to feel that it's the person. But we don't look at somewhere hollow where there's nothing and then think that it's a being, do we? But all our lives we were staring at hollow things, hollow objects, which is just the eye, and it's just a hole. We are staring at holes inside the eye, and then we were told that we are talking to a person. So these are small points that you can be mindful of. That I'm just, is this a person, or is just, am I just talking to a hole? I'm staring at a hole and thinking that this is a person. So it's not a person that you're staring at. It is an empty hole that you're looking at. And the other way around, you're not looking at that empty hole. It is because you have an empty hole in there, and therefore light can come through. So when light comes through that, it falls on your retina. It focuses onto your retina. And then on your retina, you have cells called rod cells and cone cells. And according to, so rod cells capture aperture or the exposure of light. And then the cone cells are three types. So they capture the waves for red, green, and blue. Sorry, red, yellow, and blue. So they capture the wavelengths of that. They don't capture red, green, they don't capture red, yellow, and blue. What they capture is the wavelength. When a certain wavelength is met, the rod cells are fired. They are triggered. Therefore, a certain nerve impulse goes. So when all of those nerve impulses go to the brain, so maybe with each an individual nerve impulse, it goes to the mind. And then the mind accumulates all of them into a picture, into an image. So the image is always created inside the mind. It never is created inside your brain. It is always created inside your mind. So then we'll connect this to, drew the wrong side, I think. Okay, we'll connect this to the brain somewhere. Let's just imagine this is the brain, okay? So then this goes to the mind. So the brain and mind are connected in a certain protocol. So we don't need that far, but then this goes to the mind base. When the mind base receives this signal, then the mind starts forming, or the function of the mind is triggered. This part we call receive, because a certain stimulus is received, and then the process of the mind is triggered. When something is received, let's say you're at home alone and then you get a knock on the door. What do you do? You get a knock on the door. First, you don't open the door, but you look through the what do you call it? The eye hole. So you look through that to check who is there, right? So just like that, the base of the mind gets a knock. Knock, knock, knock. Who's there? So the base of the mind gets a knock. When it gets the knock, then it doesn't get a knock, right? So when it gets the knock, it checks to identify what it is. It recognizes it. So when you recognize who is there, let's say the knock was coming from your mother. So she's outside now. She's outside the house. So you recognized her, and then you register her. You register whatever that came through the whatever the object is. So you received the stimulus. When received, that's a knock. And then you recognized it. You looked through the eye hole of the door, and then you recognized it as your mother. And then you registered it in your memory. And then what do you do as soon as you register that it's your mother? Sorry? Yes, you respond to it. You open the door. What if you see that it as a stranger? You don't open the door. That is your response. That's also a response. Not responding is also a response. So, then you respond. So you received, registered, recognized, and then now you respond. Now what happens in the mind is that now is the time to perceive. Now the mind perceives all of these events. All of these four, the mind perceives together. It's like an engine, right? So that's the process of the mind. That's why it looks like an engine. It's a process. That reminds you it's a process. So if it wasn't for this perception, all the things would have happened, but you wouldn't know. You wouldn't have seen. The only reason why you see something is because you perceive. So it's like everything has happened. You just get to know about it. All the disaster just takes place in this world, but you get to know about it from the news. Maybe part of the world is wiped out because of a nuclear bomb. Maybe. But then you get to know about it in the news. It's so unfair. But when you get to know about it, the funny thing is, the irony of this is, you get to know about in this direction. Don't you? Because first thing you perceive is that yourself. I am here. I am looking at the flower. Isn't that the way you perceive it? You're here and then you're looking at the flower. But everything happened in this direction. First the flower or the light fell on the flower. And then that light came into the eye. That went into the brain. That triggered a mind. And when that mind was triggered, at the end of that mind, a process called perception happened. Only then you got to know that there is a world like this and you're living in it. That's only when you got to know about it. But when you get to know about it, you're the boss in the house. And then you're here and you think that you did all of this. This process, you feel it as yourself. Just think about it. Isn't these things what you feel as yourself? The response. That is what you do, right? It is something that you do. The response feels like it's yours. Recognition. I recognized it. Right? So when you see something, you say that, I just recognized it. You did. But recognition is a function of the mind. For example, if you don't have a memory of something, you wouldn't be able to recognize it. There's this, I think, he was a famous musician, and he lost his memory. I can't remember the disorder that he got, but he lost his memory. So, when he lost his memory, what happened was, this is taught in psychology, so when he lost his memory, what happened was, so his wife would come after work to his house, she would return home, and then she would say that, hello, I'm home. And then he gets very happy about it, because his wife returned from work and she's home. And he's very happy about it. He enjoys it. And he says, oh, hello, honey. How are you? And then how's work and all that. And then she goes to the kitchen to make some tea. And then when she brings the tea, then he again goes, oh, hello, honey. Are you home? So early. The next time. Again, the next time he sees her, Now it's like late. Oh, why are you late, honey? Because he can't remember that she was already at home. Every time he sees her, because his memory is, his long-term memory is lost. That is what is taught. His long-term memory is lost, but his short-term memory, it is there. So the function of the short-term memory, it's there, but the long-term memory is lost. So therefore, he can remember details or things, events that happens for a short period of time, but not for a long period of time. Everything that was in the long-term memory, he can't access them. That is what he's taught. So that means, was he the one who's recognizing stuff? If he was, he would be able to identify his wife, right? Why couldn't he? So my father used to share one of his anecdotes with me when I was young, in my lay life. So when we were in the UK, he used to work in one of the care homes. So in those care homes, there are maybe they are rich people, but then their sons or their children has no time to look after them. They're very busy, so they put them in the care home. A great chance to do merits, but for the children, but they lose that opportunity. Maybe because they don't have the knowledge of that. They don't know that it's merits to help your parents out, because you live with your parents until the age of, let's say, 15, 16, 17s, 18s, and then you leave your parents after that. But while you're living with your parents, you took all the help that you can from them. So therefore, you lost all of your merits by using your parents to do certain things. So when you washed your clothes, so you might have not washed your clothes. Maybe your parents washed them for you. But then you lost that opportunity when you left your parents. So just like that, these kids, these children, they leave their parents in the care home. And my father used to go and work in a place like that. And there had been this one patient. So you have to bathe him, because he can't do all the things by himself. But the only expectation that he has is to call her child. That is the only expectation that he has. So he calls her child, he calls his child every single day. But he can't remember. He has dementia, I think. He had dementia, and therefore he can't remember that he called his child. Just think about it. He calls his child. So when my father goes there, he would take a call and then ask him to call him. And then this child answers. And then he talks with that child for 1 hour or 2 hours. And then he hangs up the call. And the next instant, he can't remember that he called. And then he's longing that I couldn't call my child in a long time. That's lucky him. But there are some others, when you call the children, they just say that we're too busy to answer. So just tell him that we're okay and let him do his own things. That is other children. But this person was lucky, but was he? In one way, he was lucky that his children cared about him and they answered the calls. So, but in the other way, although they answered the calls, he can't remember. So if he was the one who's recognizing, if he was the one who was working out his memory and controlling his memory, then he should have been able to recall the fact that he called his children. But he couldn't remember that. So memory is another function that takes place in the mind. It's just another function. Recognition is another function. It happens with connecting with your memory and all that. It's another function. And registering it's another function. It's when you register what this object or what this is, what this stimulus is. Receiving, it's another function. That's when the mind receives the stimulus. That's when the mind, the process of the mind is triggered. So, all of these functions are individual functions that are triggered by each other. So, receiving this into the mental base triggers rupa. It triggers this registering process. It triggers the recognition process. It triggers the responding process, and then altogether, it is perceived. So this whole process. So now you can see this is a process. This whole process you call a mind. But these are the things individually you feel that it is yourself, or it is you who is doing them. And this we call jati. When you're feeling that it is you who's doing it, because each and every single process of these, receive, register, recognize, respond, and perceive, all of these are felt as yourself. But what we need to understand is that all of these are just individual processes that are being triggered due to the causes. The whole thing was triggered because of a stimulus. And then each and every individual things are triggered because of that stimulus touching the mind base. Because that stimulus was received in the mind base, in the mental base. When that was received in the mental base, all these processes are triggered. And then at the end, it is perceived. So you get to wake up after everything has happened. You get to know after everything has happened. You have even responded. Response happens according to a view all the time. But you just get to know about it. How unfair it is. You just get to know about after everything has happened. After recognizing, after responding, even after responding, just think about it. Even after responding, you get to know about that. You get to know that you have responded. But when you get to know, you feel that it is you who responded. That is good, because otherwise you'd get scared. So there's this mental disorder called dissociative identity disorder, DID. So the people who have that are very scared, because they have multiple identities, in the sense that they call these triggering moments. So this disorder comes up in the sometimes from they come up in the early 20s to the late 35s or 40s. They can come up in this range. So if you're in that range, be careful. This happens only when there was childhood trauma. So when there had been a lot of childhood trauma, then this dissociative identity. One day I'll try to get hang of a video of that. So it looks like possession, but I don't know what it is, right? But they're being possessed. But what they say is that they're conscious at the back. So what happens is they have multiple identities. These identities have their own names. I mean, we're trying to get rid of the feeling of this identity, and they have multiple identities associated in the same body. It's very weird. But then, just think about it, they have multiple identities. Let's say, because you call them a person, so this is the body, that's what they call them, right? Although we know it's just a body, and even a spirit can possess this body, and then it can control this, because this body only needs energy to be controlled. So we've seen spiritual possessions, right? So when the body is possessed by a spirit, then that spirit does whatever it wants. It just needs to supply energy from the mind. The body only needs mental energy, and then that if a mental energy from somewhere connects to the brain, then this body functions. According to that mental energy, according to the signals sent by the mind to the brain, this body functions, because the function of the body is completely controlled by the brain. Every single arm that you move, every time you move the leg, every time you blink, all of those functions are controlled by the brain. But sometimes, but for the brain, the message is sent by the mind. That is one thing. But if there's another way to send the messages to the brain, or if there's another way to, let's say, reconfigure the functions of the brain, or stimulate the brain in some sort of way, then the body would function. So just like that, these people with dissociative identity disorder, they explain the experience like few people staying inside the back of their mind. But what's the scariest part is that sometimes, so they call these triggering events. So these are the events that triggered their childhood trauma. So it depends on that. So for example, for one person, it might be ice cream that triggers that event. And not trauma, but the triggering of the other personality that is inside them, the other identity that is inside them. So when they're going in front of an ice cream shop, let's say, so this person is 20 years old, but an identity or another personality with 9 years old comes up. And then this guy, this person suddenly starts to act like a 9 year old. Seriously, there's a disease like that. No, disorder like that. This person suddenly starts to act like a 9 year old. And they go like, ice cream. This person is 25 years old. But then when the 9 year old comes, then they act like a 9 year old. So there are some people with like 6 personalities or many, many personalities. They give them names as well. They have different names. When you ask them, they say out their name. So that triggers. When they trigger, their personality completely changes. So that means none of these functions are controlled by you. The mind should be there, and when the mind is there, whatever the mind it is, the body functions according to that. And this is how the mental functions work. Even in a person with dissociative identity disorder, this is how that mind works. That's why when the younger personality comes up, the body acts according to that way. Because the responses in that mind are according to the views of that mind. The responses are according to when you see ice cream, you need to shout it out. That is the nature of the 9 year old. So they don't care that they're in a body of a 20 year old. They don't care about that. The scary part is that when they come up, the other personality, which is what you call the main personality, can't control the body. It doesn't even know where the body is. So when the 9 year old comes up, it just wanders off wherever it wants. And then comes a time where the main personality comes out, which is the 20 year old or 25 years old. When they come out, they just find themselves completely different to where they left the body. Maybe they left the body in front of an ice cream shop, but when they find themselves in the middle of the road, because themselves were triggered back. Because the 9 year old left. But then again, when you go in front of the ice cream shop, again the 9 year old comes up. So what they try to do is these people, they try to avoid these triggering moments. So if they know that the ice cream shop is in front of them, they just look away. But whatever the mind comes, whatever the mind that is there supporting the body, whatever it is, that explains that this is not your body. You don't own this. It's just a temporary place that the mind rests in. You don't own it. It's not yours. Just because currently the mind is in that, doesn't mean that you own it. Haven't you bought a car and then sold it? Haven't you bought something and then sold it back? So when you bought it, you thought it is yours, right? If it's yours, then how can you sell it? So you didn't own it in the first place. You thought that you owned it when you was with you. You thought that it is yours. That's all that happened. So just like that, every single time when the mind arises in the body, you think that this is your body. You just think about it. You just feel that way. Just because you feel that way, it doesn't make it real. Just because you feel that this is your body, it doesn't make it your body. Because just think about it. What makes up your body? Was it the same body that came out of your mother's womb? No. Is it the same body? You'd say that, Swaminathan, sir, it is. I was 1 year old back then, and now I'm 20 years, 25 years, 30, 35, 40, 45. And then you tell me like that. Swaminathan, sir, it's like that. It is me who grew up. It is myself. I'm the one who was there back then, and I'm the one who is here right now. Is it really? Just forget about the mind for now. Just think about the body. What creates the body? It's just the things that you eat. So the previous owner of you was a farmer somewhere in a paddy field. That is the owner of your body. Because he owned the grains of rice. The rice that you ate last week, he owned it back then. The shopkeeper owned it. So your body belongs to everyone in this world. That's why your body is, it belongs to this universe. It doesn't belong to anyone. Okay, so we were talking about the mind. We'll talk about the body in another day. So we were talking about the mind. So these processes individually gets, so a process called the process of defilement happens in the mind simultaneously to this process. So now we know that this is just a process that takes place to identify and to perceive the stimulus that touch the mind base. Now we know that is what you call the mind. But individually, showing from this side, individually, these events occur, and therefore you receive, register, respond, recognize, respond, and perceive. So individually, these events just takes place, and this is what you call a mind. It's just like this. So, for example, just think about a potato machine. Let's call it a potato machine, right? At least. So this machine, what it does is, when you put a potato in it, what it does is, it washes it, it scrapes it peels it down, and then it cuts it, it fries it, it packets it, and then sends out of the machine. All you have to do is put potatoes in it. Agreed? So when you put potatoes from this end, you get packed potatoes from the other end. Right, so either you can call this machine the potato washing, peeling, cutting, packaging machine, right? Or you could just put all of those things together and then call it a potato machine. Just like that, just like the house that we drew earlier. The windows, the door, and the roof, and the ceiling, and the walls, all together we call it a house. But the house itself does not have a function. Just like that. These five functions together we call a mind, but a mind itself does not have a function, because a mind, again, it is a way that we refer to the configuration or the collection of all of these functions. So it's not a single mind that's there, and then that mind keeps on receiving stimuli from the outside. It's not a mind that is there and then receiving stimuli from the outside. It's not like that. The mind that we call the mind itself, it's a collection of functions. And these are those five functions. So when those five functions are together, you call it a mind. So then another small thing happens, not a small thing, but this is the main culprit. Another thing happens simultaneously to this process. The mind has a view saying that this world has special things in it. Special things in the sense, separated things which have their own identities, which you call an entity. The mind has a view that there are entities in this world. So if there are entities in this world, then I can interact with them, right? Just think about it. The views that you have in your mind, what are they about? So in the TV adverts and the adverts that you see, you get to see that this thing is good. This thing brings you happiness. This thing is good for your life. This tea, if you drink it, you can be slim. Don't drink these. This is not good for you. So these are the types of views that you get all throughout your life. This car is good to ride. So this watch is when you wear this, it gives you value. So these are the types of things that you get that you get as a view in life. These types of clothes only very posh people wear. So branded clothes. So these sort of things you get in life as views. But all of these views, just think about them, are about entities, aren't they? They're about fixed entities which have an individual identity and which you can deal with, in the sense that which you can use. All of these entities, all of the views that you have in your mind are about entities. So therefore, the mind has a view that entities exist in this world. Things exist in this world. Separated things which have their own identity exist in this world. When something exists, and when you can experience something, what is the next thing that you want to do? Associate it. So just think about it. So way back then, there was a lockdown of social media in Sri Lanka. So when I was in my lay life back then. So that means that you can't access social media using the normal internet in Sri Lanka. But then people found out that there was a way to access it using a VPN. There was a way to access it. People found that out. But at first, they thought that there wasn't a way, we're locked down, and not during COVID, even way back before that, right? So, just think about during COVID, people got locked down into houses. There was no fuel in the country. But then they came up with the idea, brilliant idea, to give a fuel pass. So at first you thought that there is no fuel and no way to get fuel pumped into your car and no way to go around in the country. When you got locked down, there was no way to leave the house and we are locked down. But then you came up with the idea that so you can't go to schools and the schools are closed. But then people came up with the idea we could use social media to interact with the children. There is a way. So when you get into your head that something is not possible, you tend to feel that you don't tend to feel anything. So at first you start feeling that, oh, it's not possible, so what are we going to do? But then after some time, because it's not possible, you don't come up with different ways to make it possible. But when you feel that something is possible, at the back of your head, when you feel like that, when something is possible, when there's some way to do it, then what you do is, you try to find some way to make it possible. That's how cybercrime happens. Because everything is locked down, in the sense of the security of the servers and the firewalls and all that. So everything is locked down, but the hacker's motive is that some way, somehow, it's possible. So they find somehow, some way, a loophole to get into the servers of another country or something. That is their motive. It is possible. So just like that, when you have the view that something is impossible, then you don't do it. As I sometimes always, like our teachers always tell us, that always be in the motive that what you're doing, what you're trying to achieve in life is possible. Don't ever think that something is impossible. Because when you have the possibility inside your head, that becomes a driving force for you to go towards your goals. So that comes away from your ignorance. Your ignorance itself means that separation is possible. That is possible in this world. When there's a possibility, then the mind inclined towards it. The mind just likes it somehow. Because in the impossible world, when you see a possibility, then your mind is attracted towards it. That is how you naturally are, right? When something is impossible, and when someone shows you a way to make it possible, then your mind is attracted towards that way. You really want to do it. Do you get what I'm saying? So in the impossible world, when something is possible, then your mind is attracted towards it. So just like that, when the mind gets the view that this separation is possible, and to experience separation, it is possible in this world, then the mind is attracted towards it. The mind inclines towards it. Then the next thing the mind wants is to experience it, to associate it, to experience separation. That is the next thing the mind wants. So this possibility, this idea of possibility, is what you call ignorance. Because that is ignorance about the reality of this world. Because in the reality of the world, separation is not possible. That is ultimately what you have to understand. As soon as you understand that, then the mind stops attracting towards it because it is not possible. When the government bans down the social media, then if people think that going around it is not possible, then people wouldn't do anything to go around it. But then somehow someone came up with that idea that using a VPN it's possible. And then they all started using it. They all got attracted to it. That's why breaking the rules without knowing is very fun. It's very pleasurable. Why? Because a rule itself means that it is not possible. The mind gets that fun in every single mind. The mind experiences that fun in every single mind. That is why it is so hard to get rid of it. Not rid of it, but to understand it. Because it feels that it is very fun. It feels that pleasure. When you have a rule implemented, so the teachers in the schools and the students might experience this. So when there are rules, either in the country, or that is why breaking rules is very fun. That's why people who break rules always break rules. Because they experience that fun. They experience that possibility in the midst of impossibility. And that possibility is very fun. Because you're doing something which is typically impossible, but you find a way to make it possible. You have it inside your head that it is possible. So just like that, when you break a rule, you're breaking the impossibility. People say that you're not allowed to do this. Then, as soon as someone says that, then it goes into your head, okay, it's impossible. Some children just believe that and they stay in the class. Let's say that it is not allowed to go out during a class time. And then some children, they feel that, is it really impossible? And then they plan it out. If I go to the toilet during the class, and then I can roam around. Don't do that. So this is one idea. If I go to the toilet during the class, then after going to the toilet, I can roam around. The teacher wouldn't know. That is the possibility out of the impossibility. If I sneak behind the camera, the CCTV camera, then I can do something without others knowing. That is the possibility out of the impossibility. Where everything is impossible, when something is possible, it's very fun. Because you want to seek that opportunity. So just like that, the mind gets the idea that separation is possible. Experiencing an entity is possible. As soon as the mind gets that idea, the next thing is that the mind is attracted towards it. When the mind attracts towards it, then it wants to experience it. But unfortunately, the things in this world aren't separated. The process of the mind isn't separated. There's nothing special about this. It's just cause and effect. It's just a process that is taking place due to the causes. When this arrives, this triggers. When this happens, this happens. When this happens, this happens. When all of these happens, perception happens. All of these are cause and effect. Nothing special about it. Nothing to write home about. All of these are cause and effect. But the mind wants to experience something special. And it has the idea that experiencing that is possible. But unfortunately, the process of the mind does not bring it any special experience. Therefore, what happens is, the mind is vexing and the mind is expecting that separation. The mind wants to experience it. The mind really wants it. Let's say that this is the same example of the social media is banned. Or let's say the typical example of the children going out of the class. As soon as he stepped out of the class, he sees the sectional head. Putta, where are you going? And then he gets frozen. Because now he really wants to escape the class, but this is blocking me. The sectional head is blocking me of escaping the class. Now what happens is, that person's vexation overgoes. It goes beyond a point, and then maybe what he does is he just runs. Again, out of the class, not into the class. Sometimes children run into the class because they're so scared. Sometimes children don't run into the class, they just run somewhere. Because if I get caught, I'll get beaten up. But if I don't get caught, then I won't get beaten up and I can come to the class later. And then they run. So they ran, not because of anything. They ran because they felt that their expectation might not be fulfilled. They were in a huge pressure. Their minds were in a huge pressure when they were sneaking out of the class. As soon as the sectional head saw them, and then she shouted out saying that, where are you going? And with that stern voice, they got scared, frightened, and they thought that my expectation would not be fulfilled. And as soon as they got that idea into their head, they ran. to fulfill that expectation. Just like that, the mind does the same thing. I mean, this is the top layer that we see in of the process of the mind, right? The actions of the mind. That is the same thing that happens in the bottommost layers of the minds as well. The things that we can't actually see. We can't actually see, but this is what happens. That's why the top layer is also like that. Because it's the same mind. So just like that, the mind falls into this vexation and it really wants to experience this separation. It really wants to experience this speciality, this special experience. It really wants to experience that, but it is not coming from rupa. It is not coming from registering, because registering is just a process that happens due to causes. It's not anything special. When the causes are there, it registers. When the stimulus is there, it registers. So it's nothing special. And the response, recognition, when the stimulus is there, memory is there, it recognizes. When the stimulus is there, it responds to the stimulus. When you see your mother outside the door, you open it. There's nothing special about it. But the mind wants to experience something special. So none of these things gave the mind speciality or experience of something special. So then the mind runs. It can't bear its vexation. Therefore, it creates something which is similar to what it wants. We call this the insanity mode. The mind goes insane. Now the mind is not sane. It goes insane. This is the same thing that we see, as I've heard, this is the same that we see with the mental patients in the mental hospitals. So let's say someone was really, he really wanted a car in his life, but he couldn't get that. Because he couldn't get that, he was about to get it, and then he lost that opportunity. And then came the thought to himself that I would never gonna get a car in my life. And then the mind kicks out the insanity mode, and then he started feeling that he has a car. He started perceiving it, because you don't actually need this to perceive. It's just a stimulus. It just brings you a stimulus. But for you to perceive, this process is what you need. That is why hallucinations can take place. So there's another mental disorder called... Why is it all about mental disorders today? There's another mental disorder called schizophrenia. In that, you hear auditory hallucinations and you sometimes see visual hallucinations. You hear like people calling you or some voices at the back of your head. These are hallucinations. Sometimes you start seeing things that are not actually there. I heard of a girl. So she said that, so while she's in the class, she was looking at the aircon and she was smiling while she was in the class. So she was looking at the aircon and then she was smiling and giggling. Only she's there. So she's alone. So there's another girl next to her, but she's alone smiling at the aircon. And then the teacher asked why. And then she said, "Can't you see all these little creatures coming down from the aircon? And they're so tiny. They're also here on the desk. They're playing with each other." And she was actually experiencing that. She was actually seeing it, although we couldn't. So we thought that she was insane because we can't see it. That's how it is, right? That's how insanity is defined. Let's say that there are 20 people or 30 people in this room. three of you can see a demon here. Not me. Three of you can see a demon here, or a devil, a black devil. And he's staring at me. So three of you can see it, but the rest of you can't see it. What do you call those three people? You call them insane. But let's say 27 of you can see him, but three of you can't. Now what do you call those three? Again insane. Now what is insanity? Is he seeing the demon or not seeing the demon? When the majority has a norm, you call it the norm. When the minority is there, they don't feel it, then you call it the abnormal. Then you call it the insanity. So likewise, if you go to a mental hospital and then ask someone who's taking medication there, who is the crazy person here? Or who is the insane person here? They would all point at the doctor. Why? They would all point at the doctor and say that guy is the mental person. That guy is the person who'd gone insane because he's just giving pills to everyone and we're okay. We don't have a problem. That person's giving pills to everyone. He's the person who's gone out. They would say that. Why? Because in there, the majority has a disease. So you can't actually define that, can you? So it's likewise, that is what has happened to, I'll explain, right? So likewise, when this takes place in the mind starts feeling, the mind starts perceiving what it really wanted. That is separation. That is an entity. That is an identity. That is to experience something special, to experience something different, to experience something separated. That is what it wanted. So when the mind's vexation overgoes, just like that child ran out of the class, when he saw the sectional head, or the principal, just like that, the mind overgoes. Therefore, the mind starts feeling that it is an entity, that it is a person, that it is a being, it is an individual, it has an identity. It starts feeling that. It starts feeling like a self. So when you look at, let's say, a car, which is not actually red. What do you call it? Look at this. This is not red. It's not actually red. It is said that ladies have the ability to see colors more separated than men. Yes. Why did you go get that ability? Because the necessity might have been there before you were born. So there was a necessity for the ladies to see more separation. That's why you can see more colors than the men. It is said. Scientifically, it has been proven. So don't blame me. But I was just saying that there had been a necessity for the chaos to come together, right? Just like the sandcastle, right? No offense. But look at this. So you see red color here. But this is not actual red. It's sort of like, I mean, it's a, what do you call it? If it's not red and if it's not pink. Coral. Sorry? Coral. You call it, when you have an idea of something, so this thing. This is not actually a sunflower, is it? Well, it is, but technically it's not. It's plastic. Right? So then when something looks like some other thing that is already in your head, right? That's something that you know and you want to really define this thing that you're actually seeing. So you're seeing this object. You know about this object. Okay? So when you're looking at this, you want to define this using this. What is the word that you put at the end? You put whatever this is, and then you put I as H, H, right? This sort of look like reddish, brownish color, right? You define it like that, right? Ish. That's why, ladies and gentlemen, because this is not according to what you feel, but this is not actually that thing, right? This is not actually that, but this looks like it. This is just like it. This is not that, but this is like it. Therefore, you call it, this is that-ish. That's why I called you all selfish people. Because you have you're all selfish. You feel a self, but that's just a perception. It's selfish, but it's not the self. It's selfish. Just like this is reddish, the pinkish thing, that is a selfish thing. That is being born inside your head or the mind. Due to ignorance. That's why everyone in this world are selfish, except there are Arithunanse. Everyone in this world are selfish. So when you start defining what selfish is, then you can see everyone in this world as selfish. This is not being cynical that everyone's doing their own thing, right? For their own good, but selfish. Everyone is selfish. Nowhere you can find the actual self, because it doesn't have a purpose. It doesn't have a function. The only thing that you find is the feeling or the perception of the self. It's just a perception. It's not a real thing. It's just a perception. The perception that you get out of it is not actually there. It's not actually a real thing. It's just a perception. It's selfish. It looks like the self, but it is not the self. It is just a perception. Because the mind went through so much vexation, and then it started feeling the self. It started perceiving a thing like a self. It started perceiving an identity. It started perceiving itself as an entity. Then it starts to recognize itself as the body. Just think about it. It starts to recognize itself as a collection of muscles, bones and veins. Just think about it. It started perceiving a whole as a being. The whole that's in your eye, it starts perceiving that as a being. Just think how selfish you are. That is why at the start I called you all selfish people. Because there's something like the self that is happening inside the minds. The mind is always selfish. Because it has ignorance. Ignorance gives rise to the feeling of the self, which is the selfishness. That is why even in Sinhalese, So that's why I told you that you have to see this world as selfish people. When you see this world as selfish people, your compassion grows. Because you start seeing that it is not the person who did something, but it is this configuration, it is this effect that came into reality, that took place. You start seeing that. When you start seeing that, you start being more compassionate towards people. Towards others, towards everyone. That's why you have to be selfish. Not selfish, selfish. That is why even in Sinhalese, you call it Atma Arthakami. Atma means the self. Artha means the meaning. So you have to live your life by knowing the meaning of Atma. So the reality of your Atma, you have to know the meaning of that and then live your life. When you do that, what happens is that feeling just fades away, little by little. Ignorance goes away, because when you know the meaning of Atma, that means you're starting to get to know about the meaning of the self. That means it is getting rid of ignorance little by little. So start seeing this whole world as selfish. Selfish. not being cynical, but being looking this at this world as a selfish world. Everyone in this world are selfish. So the more you look at this world as selfish, the more your selfishness goes down. That's how you have to not be selfish if you attend Nibbana. What they mean is not selfish. What they mean is selfish. So understand the meaning of the self and live your life. And then at the end of that journey, you'll find true bliss. So we discussed a part of the defilement process. There is another part, which I'll explain to you in the next week. I couldn't show you that video yet. The marshmallow video. I think I brought it last week and this week as well. We'll try to see you next week. Okay, so we'll transfer the merits and conclude the sermon for today. Let's take a moment to transfer the merits you have acquired throughout the day. By making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, observing the precepts and engaging in various meritorious deeds throughout the day. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teachings, and with immense gratitude let us transfer these merits to the bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, upasikas and upasikas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Lord Buddha, and have passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage, as in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the members of the Mahasangha, present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves to the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that among them are the monks and nuns resident in our local temples and nunneries who have always been by our side, through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our teacher, Guru Swami Nuhanse, and all the other monks resident at this monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let's also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the people who take great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Lord Buddha, be that by sharing these sermons with others or inviting others to join them. May by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plains. May by the power of these merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the devotees, friends of the monastery, for the sake of merits, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes all of those of you who have provided the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes, and medicines, and those of you who have provided their know-how and extended their well wishes. May by the power of these merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our mothers, fathers, brothers and sisters, our uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, and to anyone and everyone who has helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way, shape or form. May by the power of these merits, May they be healed of any physical and mental ailments, overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the devas, brahmas, spirits, and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambhava Sasane. Let us also take a moment to transfer this merit to all our guardian deities who keep watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May by the power of these merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom, May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all who have been our friends, families, and acquaintances in this infinitely long journey of samsara. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to them. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the members of the armed forces, as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all who lost their lives in war be their friend of all, rejoice in the merits we have acquired throughout the day. Let's also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the people who lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides and pandemics, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this infinitely long journey of samsara. Let's take a moment to transfer these merits to them. May by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plains. May by the power of these merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let us all make a resolve that may by the power and blessings of all the merits you have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arhants on this blessed land, and may by the power and blessings of all the merits you have acquired throughout the day and throughout our whole samsara, may you and I, and everyone who has helped make these programs a success, become an Arhat Nuhanse or an Arhant Meni Nuhanse in this very life and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. Now the Mahasangha will transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnen midatnva Dvesha ginnen midatnva Moha ginnen midatnva Nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita taravetnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnayo Nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita taravetnva Raga gini niveva Dvesha gini niveva Moha gini niveva Nivan sapa labeva Nivan sapa labeva Nivan sapa labeva Tunurange Suvisyananta maha guna belen Sirlu aga sirlu satyoma Nibbana parama sukhen sukhita taravetta Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.